Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
We've been journeying through the musical Les Miserables, and this song comes in a part, you know, two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the way through the musical, and it's a song that's a prayer. It's a song that's a prayer to bring this, to bring someone home. And let me help you understand sort of the depth of this prayer and how it fits into this overall story of Les Mis. You may remember that about 5 weeks ago, we started this series with an exploration of the primary character, the lead character, Jean Valjean, who had been arrested and spent something like 19 years in prison. For what? For stealing some food to feed a sick or a hungry child. And he'd been in prison for all this time. And then finally, when he got out, he found that being on parole wasn't much better than being imprisoned. He found that there were so many restrictions on who he could be and how he could live in the world that he remained hopeless. He remained in despair. And so he turned again to crime. Sort of my sense of it is that, you know, if the society didn't owe him anything, then he didn't owe anything to society. I sort of think that's his mindset. And so he turns to theft, and he steals a bunch of silver from a local bishop. But then that bishop expresses a profound sense of grace to him, forgiveness, this amazing a song that we heard where the bishop not only says, listen, you can keep all this silver, I'm going to give you some more. But there's something you have to do with it. You have to turn your life around. You have to do something different. You have to do a new thing. He says, I give you this precious silver, but then the song lyric is, I bought your soul for God. And Valjean responds. He responds to this understanding of grace. He turns his life around. He becomes the mayor of a town. He's the proprietor of a factory. There are a number of people who in a small town work for him, who look to him for guidance and for leadership, but also for an ability to make their way through the world by having work. He is a beacon, a lighthouse perhaps, in that community. But we know that even in some positive situations, sometimes difficult things can happen. And there's a woman who works in that factory who is ostracized by the others, who is ultimately thrown out by one of the foremen. Why? Because she spurns this foreman's advances, inappropriate advances, but also because news comes out that she has a child. You may remember that we talked about this song, I Dreamed a Dream. And it's a song where she explores the dreams, the aspirations, the visions that she has had for her life, but grieves that those dreams did not come to be. And in fact, the song lyric from there is, life has killed the dream for me. And the way it goes in the story, the way it goes in the musical, is she dies in Valjean's arms. And Valjean is overcome with grief. In those last moments of her life, as she is caring for others, even in those last moments, she talks about how she has a daughter, and a young girl named Cosette, who's living with an innkeeper for care, for a place to be, while Fantine, her mother, has to work or do whatever it takes to try to support her daughter, even from a distance. And Valjean makes a promise. He makes a promise to care for this daughter. He makes a promise to care for Cosette. And he does. He goes, and turns out Cosette requires rescuing from this innkeeper and his wife, a couple who are filled with greed and all kinds of sort of shady practices. And so Valjean rescues her, and they come to develop this relationship, this profound relationship, even though they're not blood related, this parent and child relationship that is surely worth celebrating. This relationship where Cosette sees Valjean as a father figure who loves him, who is devoted to him, and where Valjean sees Cosette as his daughter who loves her with everything that he has. Well, it comes a period in French history, because you may remember that this takes place in France. There comes a period in French history where rebellion comes, where there are groups of students who begin to stand up and say, what's happening in our culture is not okay. And you may remember the song last week, Do You Hear the People Sing? We will not be slaves again. And as these people rise up, as these students build barricades, the French army responds. Now, it turns out Cosette, this young lady who's grown up in Valjean's care, she has fallen in love with one of these young students, a man named Marius. She's fallen in love with him, but in the ultimate battle that takes place between these students and these soldiers, many of the students, even children, are killed. And Marius himself is gravely wounded. But Valjean, who himself has survived the battle, rescues Marius and carries him and carries him and carries him and carries him to the detriment of his own physical body, who brings him to a place where he can be, brings Marius to a place where Marius can be nursed back to health. And yet it seems that Valjean himself, through age and through circumstance, has reached the end of his life. And yet it's in this time that Valjean sings this song, this prayer. God on high, hear my prayer. If I die, let me die. Let him live. This is Valjean's prayer. Valjean turning to a higher power, something bigger than him, something beyond him, and saying, I give everything that I have so that this one, perhaps that I barely know, but one who would mean so much to my daughter, to one that I care about, one that I love. And if that's not the picture of Christ-like love, I don't know what is. If that's not the picture of selflessness, I don't know what is. If that's not something we ourselves might aspire to, that we might look toward, a way that we might see ourselves giving ourselves entirely to the world, then I don't know what is. And this is supported by our sacred text, and I wonder if we might turn our attention to the 15th chapter of the Gospel of John, as Jesus himself talks about the power of love, not in that Huey Lewis in the news kind of way, but in profound language. In the Gospel of John, Jesus has washed the disciples' feet, and then he gives them a new commandment. He says, love each other. He says it three times. Then Jesus talks about being the way and the truth and the life. He talks about not leaving the disciples as orphans. He talks about being the true vine. And then again, he comes back to the idea, the command to love each other. And so let's hear now from the 15th chapter of the Gospel of John.
This is on page 878 in the Pew Bibles. As the Father loved me, I too have loved you. Remain in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I kept my Father's commandments and remain in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy will be in you and your joy will be complete. This is my commandment. Love each other just as I have loved you. No one has greater love than to give up one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I don't call you servants any longer because servants don't know what their master is doing. Instead, I call you friends because everything I heard from my Father I have made known to you. You didn't choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you could go and produce fruit and so that your fruit could last. As a result, whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give you. I give you these commandments so that you can love each other.
It's a popular verse, verse 13 from this passage. No one has greater love than to give up one's life for one's friends. Jesus is talking about what he will do, but we might see that Jean Valjean is giving up his life as well. And I think that can be instructive for us, but I don't think I want you to take from this that we should all go out and risk our lives. But I think that when we think about giving up our lives for others, that we might see something profound. We might see a greater possibility. I mentioned several weeks ago that what I knew about myself, what I knew, my dream, was that I would be a rock star. Or an aeronautical engineer. Or an IT professional. That I didn't see myself doing what I'm doing today. And yet I would suggest that I gave those things up. I gave up those visions of my life to do what I'm doing today in response to a God who called me and who continues to call. But I wonder for each of us what we may see of ourselves, what we may have envisioned for ourselves, that we may have given up to do a different thing, to do maybe a bigger thing, to be a profound light in ways that we hadn't imagined ourselves being before. In some ways, we might see that in line with the scripture that reminds us to die to ourselves so that we can give ourselves to God. But I want to illustrate this in a little bit of a different way. And I want to talk about this by talking about a different church, a United Methodist church, but not this one. This is a church here in San Diego. You might know about a church in the Normal Heights area called, used to be called Christ United Methodist Church. It's not called that anymore. It's a church that was not United Methodist until 1968. Now, you may remember that the United Methodist Church just celebrated the coming together 50 years ago of the Methodist Episcopal Church and the Evangelical United Brethren. Well, Christ United Methodist Church used to be, before 1968, an Evangelical United Brethren church. So in that merger, it became a United Methodist Church. It is not a United Methodist Church today, but I'd like to tell you why. You see, over the course of its history, fewer and fewer people would participate in its ministries. Fewer and fewer people would celebrate worship together on a regular basis. And it came to a point where that congregation, under the leadership of a faithful pastor, had to make a difficult decision. And in one sense, it was a decision about whether or not to close. But here's how that pastor, a man named Bill Jenkins, someone I look up to a great deal, here's how Bill Jenkins phrases that decision. I just talked to him yesterday. Here's how he phrases that decision. He said, we had to decide if we were going to be open 1 hour a week or 7 days a week. You see, the vote of that congregation was to close as a church, but to reopen immediately as what's called a ministry center. Now, that has all kinds of implications in the detail and paperwork back end, but what it meant is they had a great deal more freedom to reach out and serve the community in ways that they hadn't felt able to before. You see, they died to what they had been doing so that they could live into something more. They died to a 1 hour a week opportunity for the community, and they lived into an opportunity of 7 day a week ministry. And I'd like to give you a visual representation of what that looks like. We have a video clip of a news report out of NPR in Arizona that talks about Christ Ministry Center and what they're doing. This video is a couple of years old, and they're doing even more now. So let's turn to this video to hear a little bit about Christ Ministry Center. When I heard from Bill Jenkins, who is now a retired pastor, busier now than he ever was before he was retired, working in Christ Ministry Center, he said that this ministry center has reached something in the neighborhood of 8,000 to 10,000 individual lives. 8,000 to 10,000 individuals who have come through this congregation, who have been touched by grace and by light. And it's all because this congregation chose to die in one way so that they might live more fully in another. That they gave up their life as they envisioned it for others in such a way that they lived in a more profound and beautiful way than they ever expected. This congregation that had less than 25 people at one point in worship now hosts four separate worshiping congregations, one of whom is a United Methodist congregation called Exodus United Methodist Church that worships on the site of Christ Ministry Center. You may have heard in the news of a caravan of people coming across Central America up north toward the United States. I'm told that a majority of those persons have been welcomed across the borders legally in a refugee status. But for all of those, whether they came from Haiti or have been a part of this caravan, when these asylum seekers are allowed across the border, when they're allowed this refugee status, it's not a permanent status, it's a temporary status until they can go to immigration court. And so there's this constant specter of, am I going to be able to stay or not? And the reality that in this temporary status, there are limited services available. Of the thousands and thousands of Haitians who have come across the border, something like 90% are now in services, I'm told, on the East Coast. And yet, as we heard in the video, more than 300 people a night would spend the night in that location. Now, the city has pushed back a little. And you have to pay attention to fire codes and things like that, so there's not as many people allowed to spend the night in the church. And yet there are still people who spend the night in that church. Pastor Bill tells me that he's one of the few people that he knows of who, in a literal sense, is on ICE's speed dial. He'll get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning saying that there's someone here that we found who needs help, and can we bring them to you? And Bill says he never says no. This is a congregation who died in one way so that they might live. My friends, if this is not a resurrection story, I don't know what is. If this is not a story about giving up one's life for one's friends, I don't know what is. If this is not a story about Christ-like love, I don't know what is. This is a profound way that we might think about what it looks like to live this kind of love. Because when we think about dying for our friends, it can be a dark and terrifying and scary thing. And yet, do you see how living in this way might be an opportunity for us to envision hope, for us to live into that prayer? God on high, hear my prayer. Bring him home. This story is a story about light, about a beacon of hope. My friends, as we are gathered here this day, let us seek our own opportunities to give ourselves into that source of light and that sense of hope. In this way, my friends, we might continue to build God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. Thanks be to God. Amen. Friends, I invite you into a spirit of prayer as we are about to lift up prayers of this community of faith. You may recall that the tradition of this congregation on Communion Sunday is to, rather than speak the Lord's Prayer, we'll sing the Lord's Prayer together. If it's not a process you're familiar with, don't worry, we'll guide you through how this goes. So please join with me in the spirit of prayer. Holy and gracious God, as a community of faith, we are connected one to another. For those who are not with us this day, we remain connected. And we celebrate the connection that continues to draw us to this place, that continues to bind us together. As a community of faith, we lift up these prayers of your people. Holy God, we lift up all these things to you and any that are left unsaid. As we turn to you in sung prayer, as we join together. Father, who art in heaven.